in his kingdom. I much prefer back and forth and lots of questions and answers, but there's so much material to cover tonight and little time that I'm going to try to do my presentation. I hope that if you have questions, you'll write them down on a card. I hope if there's something in particular you want me to discuss and you worry that I won't get to it, you'll write that down on a card, and I'll make an effort to do that. When we're done, I'm going to stay after for as long as the hall is open, and anybody wants to talk, I'm happy to talk in detail about any particular issue then. But unfortunately, right now, I'm just going to stand up here and talk. And I want to start. I'm going to talk about Chapter 11 and bankruptcy law and about Talbot. Those are the subjects. But some of the stuff about bankruptcy law is general. That applies to all cases, not just Palco, and some of it's Palco specific. So if you're really interested just in Palco, you may have to sit through a little bit of general bankruptcy law, but I tell you, if I can do it clearly, it will help you understand what's happening in the Palco case. And I want to start by referring you to the chart that's on the wall behind me and also on the first page of the program. Did you get a program? Good. And if you didn't get a program, raise your hand and someone will bring you one. If you look at it, you'll see at the top is Mr. Horowitz, and this should say Charles Horowitz and other shareholders. They own Maxim. Maxim owns a company called Maxim Group Inc., which owns Mark, where's Mark? Doesn't Palco own Brit, Santa Cruz, Scotia, and they're all subsidiaries of that. All right. Maxim Group Inc. owns all of these companies, and these are the companies that have filed for bankruptcy. I don't know if that's right either, because if there are six bankruptcy cases or five, I apologize. These are the companies that have filed for bankruptcy. And you need to look at them specifically, as you know, way better than I do. Pacific Lumber and Scotia Pacific are different companies. Pacific Lumber owns the mill. Scotia Pacific owns the timber. It owns both the trees. Scotia Pacific also is where most of the debt is. Most of the debt is held by note holders, and you can consider note holders as just a different kind of bank. It's $716 million instead of one person lending it, a whole bunch of people lend it. And in $1,000 increments, and those are called notes, and there's $716 million of notes outstanding. And those are, that's a loan to Scopac. So Scopac has the trees, and Scopac has the debt. That debt is secured debt. That means that the note holders have collateral. And it means that if the Scopac fails to make payments on the notes, the note holders, the people who hold the debt, and foreclose on their collateral. Just like if the bank had a mortgage on your car, on your house, or a lien on your car, and they didn't make the payment, the bank can take the house or the car. Similarly, if Scopac fails to make payments on the notes, the holders of that debt can take the trees. If you have a payment on your house, you might have $500 or $1,000 of interest every month in order to stay out of default and keep the house or the car. In order to keep the trees, Scopac has to pay $54 million in interest every 6 months to the note holders. Why did these companies file today? You will read in this paper. When you hear about bankruptcy, you'll read that the company filed for protection from creditors. That's a standard phrase you see in the newspaper. What does that mean, protection from creditors? When a company files for bankruptcy, or when an individual files for bankruptcy, their creditors, the people they owe money to, have to stop all collection efforts. They can't sue them. They can't garnish their wages. They can't foreclose on their collateral. Bankruptcy stops all that. So if you see an ad in the TV, Are people garnishing your wages? Are people threatening the foreclose on your house? Call me. That's a bankruptcy lawyer, and he's going to file bankruptcy for you, and that will stop the garnishment or the foreclosure. In this case, as you know better than I, Stopak had an interest payment due in January, and they didn't have the $54 million. So they couldn't make the payment. And under those circumstances, the noteholders have the right to foreclose on the trees, foreclose on their collateral, the timberland, and it's to stop that foreclosure, to get protection from creditors that Stopak filed. They filed under Chapter 11 of the Bankruptcy Code. The Bankruptcy Code is a federal law, so it applies throughout the country. It's the same law throughout the country, and it has different sections that you can file under. And they filed under Chapter 11. That's the business reorganization section of the Bankruptcy Code. So if it sounds like, bankruptcy is a scary word, and it sounds like, holy cow, bankruptcy, we're out of business. In fact, if they had filed under Chapter 7, then they would be going out of business. But Chapter 11 does not mean the end of the business or the end of the company. Normally, companies file under Chapter 11 because they believe they have a viable company, but they have to fix some problems. They have to reorganize in order to make the company profitable. In this case, they need to reorganize their debt to get out from under the burden of the interest payments. And Mark points out to me that it's $54 million a year. It's $27 million every 6 months. So they filed for Chapter 11. I want to talk a little bit about how a company operates in Chapter 11. And I'll take this off. What is Chapter 11? If you borrow money from the loan shark and you don't pay the loan shark will come and he has a collection technique. there's a procedure that the loan shark can follow in order to collect the debt. And there's different ways that this issue can be handled. Here we have a situation where the borrower, Stopak, can't pay what it borrowed to the note holders. So the note holders don't send around Tony Soprano and his friends. Instead, this process is resolved in bankruptcy court. And there's special rules as to how bankruptcy court works. Bankruptcy court is a forum for the resolution of a dispute between the debtor and the creditors. The debtor is a company that owes money, in this case, Stopak, and it's a dispute, the resolution of the dispute between those companies and the people they owe money to, which in this case is principally the note holders. They owe money to a lot of other people, including perhaps people in this room, but the $760 million to the note holders is the largest creditors. And what's the dispute? The dispute is, are the creditors going to get paid? How are they going to get paid? How much are they going to get paid? And when are they going to get paid? I used to know a bankruptcy lawyer that I admired a lot. And he said he always, in corporate bankruptcies or in any kind of bankruptcy, he'd always much rather represent the person who owed the money rather than the creditors. Because he said, when you represent the creditors, you only say one thing. Where's my money? Where's my money? Where's my money? When you represent the debtor, you have to keep creatively coming up with answers to that. So it's much more challenging job. In bankruptcy court and in Chapter 11 cases, the question is, how are creditors going to get paid? How much are they going to get paid? When are they going to get paid? And very often, and I think likely in this case, another question is, who's going to end up in control of the company? So we'll talk about that a little bit later. Chapter 11 is a scary thing, and you read about it in the newspaper, but if you don't read the newspaper and don't hear about the news, you might not notice it happen. In many ways, a company in Chapter 11 operates just as it did before bankruptcy. In most cases, after a company files Chapter 11, management stays the same. And there are exceptions to all of these, but in most cases, management will stay the same. The company will continue to operate its business. It'll pay wages. It'll pay vendors. It'll pay suppliers. And it will continue to operate business as it did before. Ordinary transactions that the company engages in as a matter of course, buying and selling, it can continue to engage in. But any non-ordinary course transaction, for instance, a big asset sale or hiring or big acquisition, any non-ordinary course transaction requires approval of the bankruptcy court. In other words, the bankruptcy court allows the company to operate normally, but if the company's going to do anything extraordinary or unusual, it needs bankruptcy court approval, and the creditors, the people who are owed, get a chance to comment. I was going to put one other thing on this board, and let's see if this green pen works. This green line is the day that they filed for bankruptcy. This is before or pre, and this is after or post. I should have written before and after. I've talked about protection from creditors. That's called the automatic stay. Creditors are blocked by law attempting to collect their debts. Any debt owed before the bankruptcy. After the bankruptcy, the company will continue to pay. It happens in every bankruptcy. If company X sells widgets to Palco, and those widgets are delivered the day before bankruptcy, company X has a pre-petition claim and will not be paid until the bankruptcy is over, because claims that arise before the bankruptcy case are just like the notes. They get handled at the arrest of the case. But if those widgets are delivered here, even if the truck was delayed, if the widgets are delivered on the day after, they have to pay for benefits they receive after the bankruptcy case starts. So the demarcation line, pre-petition claims have to wait till the end of the case. That's why if the company's going to do something unusual, the court wants to know about it, the court gets to approve it in creditors, these people who can haven't received their payments, get to comment. Talked about the bankruptcy court. The bankruptcy court has, these are the principal participants in the Chapter 11 case. Again, I apologize for my handwriting, but I'll tell you what they are. They said this is the debtors. The United States trustee is an officer, and he's second on the list, but he's not that important, but I put him up here, so I got to explain something about him. It's an officer in the Department of Justice, and he has some supervisory duties, but one thing he does is appoint the creditors committee. And the creditors committee is an official group of unsecured creditors of some of the largest creditors in the case. That's an official group that meets regularly, meets with the debtors, investigates the debtors, considers their proposals. They hire lawyers and other financial advisors, all of whom are paid by Palco. So Palco has to pay for its own lawyers and advisors. The creditors committee's lawyers and advisors are also paid by Palco. But this is an unsecured creditors committee. So the note holders aren't on that committee because their claims are secured by the trees. The note holders, however, for several years, because of Palco's financial difficulty, the note holders have had an unofficial committee, which has met regularly, has met with Palco, and in fact, a year or so ago, you may recall, I think it was a year ago last fall, there was a lot of talk between Palco and about a resolution of the dispute between them, and they almost reached an agreement. This committee's been around for quite a while. It's unofficial. At this point, it pays for its own advisors, but this is a group that represents the $716 million in bond debt, and they're very active in the case. And then you have the court. The court is there to resolve disputes. It's there to approve any non-ordinary transactions that the debtor is involved in, and a ton of other stuff, including some of the things you've been reading about in the paper. But what's the principal job of these groups? The principal job of the committees is, and the bankruptcy court directs the committees to do this, to investigate the debtor's assets and business, and to negotiate the plan. And the second part two of this session, we're going to talk about the plan. One of the big advantages to filing bankruptcy is that you can stop making payments. They don't have to make payments on the notes. They don't have to make payments on any pre-petition claim. All they have to do is pay their costs going forward. But there are disadvantages to bankruptcy as well. And one is you got to pay these guys legal expenses who are fighting with you, and you are subject to broad a level of investigation by the creditors committee and other creditors committee as well. Chapter 11 is sometimes described as life in a fishbowl, and these committees and representatives of creditors have the right to go in and look at Palco's books and records, investigate transactions, see who's done what when, and make recommendations. So that's an important role that they play. I got one other thing I wanted to talk about in this section, and that is this venue issue. You know that they filed in Corpus Christi. When I first heard that they filed in Corpus Christi, my first question was, is the court in Puerto Rico closed? Here's how it works. You have to file where your principal place of business is. If XYZ Corporation is based in Los Angeles, it has to file in Los Angeles. If it's based in New York City, it has to file in New York City. That's the rule. But if you have two or more related companies in file, and one of them is based in New York, and one of them is based in LA, how do you pick? You can't. If you have two related companies in file, they should both be in the same court under the same judge, so that they should be together. So how do you pick, New York or LA? Well, the answer is the management gets to pick. So if you have related cases, managed, and they are in different locations, management gets to pick which court they file in. And here, we had four or five companies all located here, but you have one located in Corpus Christi, Texas, more or less located in Corpus Christi, Texas. And they got to choose, okay, we'll file that company in Corpus Christi, and by virtue of having one company file in Corpus Christi, everybody got to file it. So that's how they picked it, and it's not illegal what they did. Having said that, the management gets to pick, but creditors can object, and other people can object and say, no, we think you picked it for a bad reason, or maybe you picked it for good reasons, but it's not convenient. We'd like you to move it. And here, the creditors have said, really, that Scotia Development Company that's in Corpus Christi really is not central to the dispute. What's central to the dispute is reorganizing this timber company. And that's in California. And this case really should be in California. And the creditors committee has said, and what's the judge consider when he considers that request? He looks at where the assets are. He looks at where the creditors are. He looks at where management operates out of. And he tries to figure out which is most convenient for all parties involved. Here, the committee, the state of California, and various regulatory agencies have asked him to move the case to California. The creditors committee has asked him to move the case to California. And he's going to decide that on Tuesday. is coming Tuesday, or at least there's a hearing on it, and he may decide it on Tuesday, or he may say, I can't decide, I'll have another hearing. This is important for a number of reasons. But one is, if you're a small, one of the things that happens in bankruptcy court is all of the debtor's disputes are resolved in that court. So that's one reason. If you were a company that was being sued, if you're a company that made a bad automobile part that was installed in a million automobiles and it caused a million accidents all over the country, you're being sued in 50 states, you might say, okay, the heck with that, I'm filing for bankruptcy, and I can centralize all these disputes in one forum, because bankruptcy court allows all disputes to be carried out in that one forum. If you're a creditor and Halco or Scotia owe you money, or you claim that they owe you money, and they dispute it, that dispute will be resolved in the bankruptcy court. Right now, that's Corpus Christi. So if there's no dispute, it doesn't matter. You get paid whatever you're going to get paid at the end of the day. But if you have a dispute with Halco as to how much they owe you, or what the interest rate is, or whether some of it's pre and some of it's post-petition, or whether it's entitled to any particular priority under the bankruptcy code, that dispute will be resolved in Texas. So in that sense, for smaller creditors, you might rather that it be closer to home. But again, if there's no dispute, it wouldn't make any difference. I have the list of participants here, and there's really, these are the participants in every case. But here we have an unusual situation where the state of California and its regulatory agencies are playing a bigger role than usual. That's unusual, and I think that's, arguably, that's one reason that Texas is an attractive venue for Halco, because they may feel that the California courts are more likely to defer to the state regulatory agencies than a Texas court would be. But that level of participation is unusual, and it's something that makes this case distinctive. That's the end of my first half of my presentation. I thought I had 30 minutes of material, and I don't. But if you have any questions or if there's something that I haven't covered, please get a card, write down your note, and give me that card. Has Charles Hurwitz used bankruptcy as a business strategy before? That's an excellent question, and I don't know the answer. Has Charles Hurwitz used bankruptcy as a business strategy before?
Kaiser aluminum.
Well, I didn't know the answer, but I've suddenly been given a newsflash that the Kaiser aluminum simplicity patterns cases. This, in some respects, this case is not as unusual as. This case is an ordinary case, and I'll show you how. And I thought of this because of the reference to Horowitz. But there was a million of these companies in the 80s and the 90s who engaged in things called LBOs. An LBO is a leveraged buyout. And it means that, and just like when you buy your house, you can't pay cash for the whole house. You gotta borrow from a bank, and the bank takes a mortgage on the house. Similarly, when Charles Horowitz, or whoever, I don't mean to single him out, when he buys Halco and Scopac, who's got $800 million? Not him. And if he did, I'd rather not put it all down. I'd rather make a small down payment and borrow the rest. And he borrowed the rest. I think it was over 8 when he did it. Now it's down to 716, still a healthy amount. And it's borrowed by Halco and Scopac. And as long as he can make the payments, there's no problem. But if you can't, and as long as you can make the payments, there's no problem. Who cares? But if you can't make the payments, then who gets hurt? All of these, all the employees and the other people, other creditors. Because if you look at it, the day before, here's this little happy company, Palco Scopac, which owes, you know, Jones Widgets $50. And Mr. Jones is pretty sure he's going to get paid because it's a great big Palco Scopac and they owe me $50. I'll get paid. The next day, Jones is still owed the $50. But the same company owes somebody else $716 million. At this point, Jones is nervous. And they didn't get anything for incurring that debt. All they got was a new owner. That's how a leveraged buyout works. There was hundreds of them in the 80s. And Horowitz probably did more than this. Lots of people did them. Some of them were successful, some weren't. But a lot of them had to be fixed in bankruptcy. And we'll talk about this in the second part. But what happens is you have a company that turns out to be worth X dollars, and it has debt, which a very optimistic purchaser put on it in an LBO of 2X dollars. I'm just making that up. I have no idea what the numbers are here. You've got to fix this problem. Company can't operate properly. You've got to fix this problem. It's a great company. Before the debt, it made money. Before the debt, it could operate its business, pay its employees, make a profit, deliver dividends to shareholders. But with this level of debt, it can't do it. So bankruptcy, and Chapter 11 bankruptcy, is getting rid of that debt. That's what we'll talk about in the second part.
And Peter, there are a couple of paragraphs.
Have the note holders requested a change of venue? My understanding is that they are going to file a paper tomorrow, Monday. I don't believe that they have formally requested that yet, but they have certainly, they filed papers suggesting they are sympathetic to the request of the creditors in the state of California. So they haven't decided what. Read the paper on Monday or Tuesday and you'll see whether or not they join the motion of the state and the creditors committee. Can Palco file for Chapter 7 in the future? Yes. Most Chapter 11 cases, this is depressing news, most Chapter 11 cases are failures. But it's true. Most Chapter 11 cases ultimately convert to Chapter 7 and the companies are liquidated. But that is not true for large companies like this. And it's misleading for me to say that. A company like this if you get rid of the debt, I mean, you people know better than I do. Would Palco and Scopac be profitable, successful companies if they didn't owe anybody $760 million? Of course. Of course they would. So the question is, you got to get rid of the debt. Most Chapter 11 cases fail because they never got rid of the debt. Management's lousy or nobody wants what they make for a ton of reasons. That's why most business organizations fail. But if the company is a good company without the debt, Chapter 11 is a perfect tool to fix it. You fix it by getting rid of the debt and allowing the company to continue. Will creditors who don't have a dispute get paid, even without participation in the bankruptcy? If you claim that Palco owes you money, I can't give you legal advice, and I'm not your lawyer. And why do I have to say that? I have to say that because if I was your lawyer and I was giving you legal advice, I might have a conflict of interest if I went and gave somebody else legal advice. And so I can't be your lawyer. But if Palco owes you money, a couple of things will happen. One, they will send you a notice that you have been scheduled as a creditor for $100. Mr. Jones, we acknowledge we owe you $100. You don't have to do anything. They've got you listed as $100, and when creditors get paid, you'll get whatever. You may get $100, you may get 50 cents on the dollar, you'll get whatever other creditors get. If they send you a note saying, we listed you as owing you $100, but it's disputed, then you will either have to resolve it by calling them up and talking to them about it, or you may have to go to court. But there's no dispute, you don't have to do anything about it. Finally, if you don't get it, if you think Palco owes you $100, but you haven't heard anything from him, keep your eyes and ears open. Check out the website from time to time. Call up Mark, because there will be a deadline for filing claims in the case. It'll be widely publicized. It'll certainly be in all the newspapers. I bet there'll be an ad on TV, but there will be a deadline for filing claims. And if they're not scheduled as a creditor, or they haven't listed, or if you don't know, you don't have any information that they've identified you as a creditor, then you need to file a claim. It's a very simple one-page form. If we get to that point, we may have another one, a workshop in 6 months, how to fill out the proof of claim form, but it's very simple. Are only the trees, not the land, the security? No, the real estate is the security. All the land and the trees that are owned by Skopak are collateral for that loan. Isn't the new, I'm not allowed to call, but if you need a card, they'll get your card. Isn't the newest bankruptcy court in nearest bankruptcy court in Santa Rosa? Why might the case go to open? You know what? The nearest bankruptcy court is in Santa Rosa, and I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that they've asked that the case be transferred to Oakland. I think the Oakland court has more experience with large cases. There also is a number of judges in Oakland, and it may be that the court in Santa Rosa is just too crowded. But I can't answer that question. What about severance owed to former employees? I don't know the answer to that, but I'll tell you what I think. If you were terminated or you left your employment, this is the date of the bankruptcy. If you were terminated or you left your employment before and you were receiving, and I don't know what the terms are, but perhaps they said, if you're terminated, we'll pay you, you'll stay on the payroll for 6 weeks. As severance pay. And the 6 weeks came to an end right here. It says 3 weeks. After 3 weeks, they filed for bankruptcy. You're a pre-petition creditor. And I don't know what the practice has been, but what your experience has been, but probably your check stopped. Now, maybe they continued them, and they may be that they asked bankruptcy court for permission to continue them. But as a technical matter, your checks may have stopped, and you're a creditor for that amount. Will the bankruptcy affect
pension
check? It should not. If Palco had an ERISA qualified pension plan and you're getting payments from the plan, those payments should continue uninterrupted. Palco, like any other company, can terminate its pension plan, but pension benefit, and there are two things to say about that. If it terminates the plan the way any other company can, all vested benefits people will continue to receive them as long as you're entitled. As you know, companies are shedding pension plans right now like crazy, saying, okay, we don't want to contribute to pension plans, rely on your Social Security, rely on your 401ks. Any company, most companies can do that. And if Palco does it, vested benefits will continue to be paid, and that'll be it. There's a possibility that they could terminate the plan in a way that we cut benefits, but that's not likely. I'm just going to finish this point. And that's because under the pension laws, all members, all affiliated companies are responsible to pay the pension. So if you have a pension with Pacific Lumber, with Palco, and they run out of money, they can't pay, or they don't go to their plan, all affiliated companies are liable, including Maxim. So it doesn't do them any good to get out of that pension liability. Now, having said that, this is a very complicated area of the law. I can't predict the future, but they haven't made any noise to date about doing to the pension plan what United Airlines and other companies have done. They haven't made any noise about that to date. So I think that's not in the cards right now. And certainly, pension benefits will continue for foreseeable future.
That's
my last question, and I've got a 15-minute break.
Not yet.
We're almost done. I have some questions, and I'll answer some of these questions, and then I'm going to go through the stuff we did earlier was more basic, but I'll answer some of these questions now. And some of them, if I don't answer your question, it's either because because I don't know the answer, which is often the case, and I'm not going to pretend I know the answer, which is usually the case. Or it's because I'm going to answer it as part of my presentation, or because it's too complicated and I don't have time to do it, but I'd be happy to do it afterwards. So if I don't get to your question now, I'm not blowing it off, it's just that it's not going to fit in with what I'm trying to get done in this limited time. What happens if a company cannot pay post-Chapter 11 payments? How can they continue to function? The answer is they cannot. Let's talk about Papa. Just hypothetically, I'll use this example. Papa does not have to make its interest payments on the notes. Even so, it can't generate enough money for the operation of its business to pay its vendors, to pay its employees, to pay its taxes, to pay its professionals, the lawyers, and all the bankruptcy crowd. It goes out of business. That's called administratively insolvent. Company is not able to operate in Chapter 11 and pay its expenses on a going forward basis, it's administratively insolvent and it's shut down. I don't have any indication that that's happening, but I wanted to answer that question. A related question, and again, I'm a bankruptcy lawyer. I'm a bankruptcy lawyer, I'm a bankruptcy expert. I'm not an expert in PALPA. I'm not an expert in SCOPAC. I'm learning more and more, but I'm not an expert. Where do Palco current employees stand? Shaky ground? Explain. You will be paid for all your work post-bankruptcy. In the post-bankruptcy period, you do not have a risk that you will be not paid for any. If you go to work this week, you're going to pay this week's salary. And your benefits will be paid. They're required to do that. If they don't do that, they're shut down immediately. And nobody wants to see the company shut down, no matter what you've heard. Nobody, not the note holders, not the unsecured creditors committee, not the environmentalist movement that I spoke with, no one wants to see the company shut down. If they can't do payments on a going forward basis, pay their post-bankruptcy filing expenses, then it's not a viable company and it should be shut down. In my opinion, as a bankruptcy expert, I think your current employees are in better shape after the filing than before the filing. Because before the filing, you had a company which really was in financial difficulty. It couldn't make its payments. Bankruptcy gives the company an opportunity to reorganize and get rid of the overhang of debt, which has been crushing the company. You get rid of the overhang of debt, as we talked about before. Without that debt, the company is a viable company, makes money, pays everybody it owes, and sends money to shareholders. So I think bankruptcy, there's an opportunity in the bankruptcy for it to be better for everybody, including current employees. But there's certainly no guarantee. This is real life, not a reality show. There's no guarantee. Do the largest creditors get paid first? No, I'm going to talk about payments and creditors. I'm going to talk about payments and how that works. How soon could land be sold off? How soon could land be transferred to creditors? Those are two different questions. If Palco wants to sell land, and that's a non-ordinary transaction, it could do it tomorrow, but it has to get bankruptcy court approval first, so it couldn't do it tomorrow because it has to ask the court. When it asks the court, creditors get a chance to comment and give their views as to whether it's a good idea, and the court has to approve it. But the land could be sold through the bankruptcy process. How soon could land be transferred to creditors? That's what I'm going to talk about in part two. How long is the company under the protection of Chapter 11? I'm going to talk about that in part two. And if I don't, remind me. Although you can't remind me, but think it really loud, and maybe it'll come. If Palco paid are severance through January 31st, are they responsible for the remainder of the severance package? They're responsible for whatever they promised you. And if they promise to pay you severance, that's a debt that they owe that's just as valid as any other debt that the company owes. But to the extent it's a pre-bankruptcy debt, it's like everybody else. You're going to have to wait until the thing is over. But they are absolutely responsible for whatever they promised you. Why would some local vendors ask to keep it in the Texas court? You got me. I understand that some 60-some local vendors and creditors have filed papers saying they agree with Palco and the Acacia State of Texas. I know that Palco didn't offer any money to sign that paper, or promise them that they wouldn't object to their claim, or offer them anything else, because that's a crime. It's a federal crime to make a promise or a payment to anybody to get them to do something or not do something in a bankruptcy case. So I know they didn't make any promises or make any payments. And to be honest with you, I don't have a clue. I can't answer that question. They may feel, some people, and I understand it's a widespread feeling, some people may feel that the California environment, the environmental movement and the California state regulators are the reason that the companies, are the cause of the company's troubles, and their best bet to save the company is to get it as far away from those people as possible. It's conceivable that somebody thinks that and thinks that therefore it's better to have a Texas judge decide than a California judge. And maybe that's why somebody signed that piece of paper. But if I was owed money by Palco, I would want the opportunity to go to a California court and explain why, rather than have to go to Texas. But that's the kind of question you're asking to read somebody's mind. That's, I can't. I'll jump ahead a year or two, and I'm explaining why I'm jumping ahead a year or two. The goal, now they file Chapter 11. How do you get out of Chapter 11? How long do you stay in Chapter 11? The goal of Chapter 11 is something called the Plan of Reorganization. That's the goal. The Plan of Reorganization is a big, thick document, somewhere between 25 and 200 pages, and in this case, it'll be closer to 200, that tells how the company will be reorganized to be repetitive, to redundant. In short, it divides creditors and shareholders into classes, pre-petition creditors and all the shareholders into classes. It says how they will be paid, when they'll be paid, how much they'll be paid. It answers a question. Remember we said bankruptcy is a forum. When do I get paid? How much do I get paid? How are you going to pay me? Who's going to control the company? The plan of reorganization answers those questions. And remember we talked about one of the jobs of the creditors committee and the no-holders committee is to meet with the debtor and negotiate, investigate the debtor's assets in its business and negotiate the plan. And in the best case, the plan is consensual. Everybody supports the plan. It divides creditors and shareholders in classes. It says how they'll get paid. The plan of reorganization will also include some kind of business plan. Talk about how the company will operate going forward. And it talks about who the management is. Now, if there's any bankruptcy lawyers in the crowd, then know that I've simplified. What I'm saying is accurate but simplified, but it's all true. That's what the plan of the organization is. Creditors get to vote on the plan. In Chapter 11, creditors get to vote as to whether or not they accept the plan of the organization. And following the vote, the court will have a hearing to consider whether to confirm the plan. A confirmed plan is the end of the bankruptcy case. The court confirms the plan. Creditors might vote yes, and the court could say, I'm sorry, creditors, you like it, but I'm not going to confirm it. That's rare. Creditors could vote no. And under certain circumstances, the court could say, I don't care if you voted no, or if some groups of you voted no, I'm going to confirm the plan anyway. That's also rare. Normally, the court will not confirm a plan that hasn't received approval from the creditor. The plan can say a lot of things, but there are certain rules with respect to payments. And this is one of the questions I got asked. There's a certain hierarchy of who gets paid. And this is simplified, but the first people get paid are priority claims. Priority claims include your wages post-bankruptcy. So that's why you're possible to say, can't confirm a plan if those wages and vendors who provided widgets post-bankruptcy get paid. They get paid first. I'm pleased to say that the lawyers are included. The bankruptcy lawyers work for Palco and for the creditors committee or anybody else who can convince the court they deserve to be paid will get paid first. Certain pre-bankruptcy wage claims will be paid if, and this is very rare because normally your benefits and wages if you're a continuing employee will be kept current. And here's a timely question. Do individual creditors get to vote on the reorganization plan or just the committee? Every creditor gets to vote. And now, it's a little tricky. If they dispute your claim, maybe you don't get to vote. But if you have an allowed claim, every creditor gets to vote. You vote by classes. So there will almost certainly be a class of note holders. And the note holders get to vote. Unsecured creditors get to vote. Those are the two big classes, but they may be divided in. And the unsecured creditors of Palco will be classified separately from the unsecured creditors of Scotia. But each class gets to vote. And each class has to approve a plan. So the answer is your individual creditors get to vote. Priority claims get paid first. Secured claims, and you can't confirm a plan if the priority claims aren't paid in full. Secured claims are entitled to be paid in full up to the value of the collateral. Well, you can see, we're going to talk about this in the next 20 minutes until we're blue in the face, but you can see all of a sudden how much is that timberland worth is a big issue. The note holders are entitled to be paid in full up to the value of their collateral. Now, it doesn't mean they get paid. If the timberland is worth $500 million, it doesn't mean they get a check for $500 million. But they get notes or value or something worth $500 million. And if they don't, we can't confirm the plan. So there's going to be a fight for a lot of reasons, but there's going to be a fight as to what the timberland is worth because that's what they're entitled to. Unsecured creditors aren't entitled to anything in the same way, but unsecured creditors are entitled to be paid in full before the shareholders get anything. Now let's look at your chart here. The shareholder of the bankrupt company, and these companies are the bankrupt companies, the shareholder is Maxim Group Inc., which is just an office somewhere. It's Maxim Group Inc. is worse than the Corpus Christi phone book. That really doesn't, they don't even have an office. That's just, you know, a file drawer with a couple of pieces of paper. The shareholder is Maxim and Charles Hurwitz. The unsecured creditors of Palco have to be paid under the rules. They have to be paid in full before the shareholders get anything. What's the exception? There's the exception. If he proposes a plan that says, I get to keep and control of the company and the shareholder and the unsecured creditors take 90 cents on the dollar, and everybody votes yes, that's okay. But without the unsecured creditors' consent, Maxim, the shareholder can't retain control. So what does this mean? There's a very important corollary here. If the value of the assets are more than the claims, the shareholder gets to keep control. If the value of the assets are less than the claims, in most cases, the shareholder will lose control. And let me show you another example here. Let's say, hypothetically, I'm making these numbers up, they don't mean anything. Let's say, hypothetically, we all agree that Palco is worth $1 billion. Is that a billion? Yes. And they owe $716 million. And Charles Hurwitz owned all the stock. Now all of these things are wrong. That, this number's right. That number's wrong, and he doesn't own all the stock. There's other shareholders up here. And also, there's the intermediate holding companies. It's not just Palco, it's a bunch of companies. But we'll just use this as an example. If a company is worth $1 billion, and he only owed $716 million, and he couldn't make the payments, it wouldn't be right to take it away from him. Even if he couldn't make the payments, it wouldn't be right. Because he's got equity, like you have equity in your house. He has equity of $284 million. And under these circumstances, the bankruptcy court will allow him to restructure this debt. You can't pay $54 million a year. Instead of making those notes 20 year notes, we'll make them 50 year notes. We'll stretch them out. And not only that, it's interest only for the first 20 years. We'll figure out a way that you can hit so you can keep your equity. We're not going to take away your equity, just like we're not going to take away your house. But if it's the opposite, if the property is only worth $500 million and the debt's $716 million, most bankruptcy courts won't let him do it. And you can imagine, you can see why. The creditors, are not going to get paid in full. They're going to take a huge discount on their claim. Under these circumstances, the bankruptcy rules don't let the shareholder keep control. This is called, for your lawyers in the crowd, your the lawyer in the crowd, this is called the absolute priority rule. Creditors get paid first, then the shareholders. And he can't be under the bankruptcy code. Unless these people consent, he can't receive any value unless this is paid in full. If the value of the assets is more than the claims, he can keep it. Then what would his problem be? Problem would be debt so much, it would be cash flow. I can't pay now because the trees just aren't selling. But next year, the trees are selling, I should be able to keep my equity. But if the value of the assets are less than the claims, no matter how you operate that property, it's not worth $716 million, then he's going to lose control. How does he lose control? In bankruptcy, we call this a debt for equity exchange. What happens is some of that $716 million is turned into stock. It just disappears. You don't owe $716 million. You owe a lot less. Or if I'm a note holder, say there's one note holder who's entitled to $760 million. All of a sudden, I'm not entitled to $760 million. That debt is canceled. It's wiped out. Instead, I'm owed $200 million or $50 million or whatever the company can afford. And the remainder is turned into stock. And the current shareholder is wiped out. Now, sometimes it doesn't always happen that it's wiped out. And people talk about Horowitz all the time. And I don't know the guy. I never had anything to do with him. And it's really not an issue of personalities. Although maybe it is an issue of personalities. But it's not necessarily an issue of personalities. It's an issue of what's fair, what debt can the company carry, and how should it be managed. Very often in these cases, I think I told you before, that everybody likes a bankruptcy case where, at the end of the day, everybody agrees. It's less expensive, it goes faster, it's more certain as a result. So it's not at all surprising in cases like this, even where you have a case where the debt exceeds the value, and these note holders, the debt is canceled, they get stock instead. Not at all uncommon for the person in Mr. Horowitz's position to retain 5/8. Why do you do that? You do that so he'll vote yes, he won't obstruct it, you get it done. But that's just a footnote. Because really, if the property is worth way less than the debt, he's entitled to it. I said that. I'll do this one more slide. Let's say we made the decision, and we decided that this company can't operate with $760 million, $1 billion of debt. Cannot, can't pay, can't cut down enough trees under the current, you know, with all the tree arbors and the state and everything. We just can't, at least can't do it. We can't cut down enough trees to pay $54 million of debt before we pay a single worker, pay a single vendor. But we could have $200 million of debt. Say we could have $200 million. That's that interest rate, we could pay interest on that and still operate profitably, pay our vendors, pay our employees, operate the mill, comply with every environmental regulation there was, and still send off a dividend to shareholders. Let's say we could do it with $200 million. Then what would the plan of the organization look like? The plan would say, for every, and let's just say, just to make it easy, instead of 716, let's say there's $800 million of debt on our account. $800 million of debt. I know it's 716, but I can't do the math. It would say, and you want to end up with a company with $200 million of debt. Here's what it would say. For every $1,000 of debt, first of all, say, all that debt's canceled. And it would say, if you are a holder, and this, remember, we have a plan, divides creditors into classes. So what happens to class four, the noteholder class? If you're a member of class four, the noteholder class, for every, your debt is canceled, but that's the bad news. But the good news is, for every $1,000 of debt, every $1,000 note you have, you will get a $250 note and X shares of stock. That's what the plan looked like. That's a debt for equity exchange. I have debt and I'm converting it to equity. And at the end of the day, you see that I've reduced the debt down to 25% of its former value. So at the end of the day, I've got a company. The company used to have $800 million in debt, and Mr. X was the shareholder. And then after the plan is confirmed, it goes into effect. I got $200 million in debt, so I canceled this, and I issued this new debt, and I got new shareholders. And because I couldn't pay creditors in full, Mr. X goes away. These people that held this debt have the new debt, and they become the new shareholders. That's a debt for equity exchange. If this company is worth less than the amount of the debt, this is almost certainly what will happen. It's not certain at all. Because I can tell you, I don't know Mr. Horowitz. I've read some of his papers. And what's his position? His position, the company's worth $1 billion. His position is that we can pay we just can't pay 716 because the environmental and the state regulators are killing us. But if we were allowed to cut all the trees we wanted to, free of regulations and free of lawsuits and free of problems from tree huggers, we could pay our debts. And what I'm gonna do, he says, is I'm gonna file bankruptcy so I can stop paying. And I'm going to file a couple of lawsuits and try to make those regulations and environmental regulations go away. And if I win those lawsuits, I can convince the court that it's really worth $1 billion. And they'll let me stretch out payments. They'll give me new terms. That's his position. And that's ultimately one of the places where this case is going to turn. I told you that creditors vote. They're good to hear you. Creditors vote, and the court confirms the plan. The court makes an independent decision, doesn't just look at the vote. Say everybody votes yes. And if Horowitz gets wiped out because it's a debt for equity plan, and he gets wiped out, nobody cares about his vote. If the judge believes that the property is worth more than the asset, he gets nothing. His vote doesn't count. If all the other creditors vote yes, the court still has to make a determination that the plan should be confirmed. And there's a lot of different things that the court looks at. One of them is, does it comply with these rules? There's a bunch of other things that the court has to look at. But one of the most important is the plan feasible? That's in the bankruptcy code. The court must make a determination that the plan is feasible. That means, and what does that mean? It's defined in the bankruptcy code. A plan is feasible if it's reasonably likely that there won't be another bankruptcy in the immediate future. Did we fix the problem? Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. In fact, the lawyers have a joke about a case that files twice in a row being a chapter 22. There is no chapter 22, but it does work. U.S. here, but you want to read about it. But the judge is supposed to make an independent determination that the plan is feasible. And what does that mean? It means that he agrees that the debt structure on the company is reasonable. That $200 million, the company probably can support $200 million, or $250, or whatever it ends up to be. And that the management is good. And that they have a plan for resolving litigation and dealing with their regulators, and that they won't be forced back into bankruptcy because of the lawsuits again. So, just a sort of conclusion. I want to get one of the questions here, and that is, I had two questions, which were the same. Okay, do the largest creditors get paid first? The answer to that is no. Creditors get paid at the same time. And when I say that these people get paid first, priority claims have to be paid in full in cash. This is the lawyers, this is the post-petition workers and vendors, this is taxes. They got to be paid for the most part. They got to be paid in full right away. Secured creditors, they're entitled to $716 million, but they can get it in value. They can get it in new notes. They can get it, which are paid out over time. They get it in stock as long as they get that value. Unsecured creditors can get paid in full or can get stretched out as well. So nobody gets paid first except for the post-petition creditors, and it's certainly not the largest ones. How long is the company under the protection of Chapter 11, and what happens after? There's an answer, and then there's a gimmick. And the answer is that the debtor, the management of the company, has the exclusive right to propose a plan for 180 days, 6 months. That period, the court can extend that period for up to a year. So it could be that if Palco and Scopac themselves are the only people who can propose a way out for 18 months. Let me tell you two caveats to that. First, the court can shorten that. It can extend it, the 180 days to a year and a half, but it can't extend it longer. It can shorten it if it wants to. If people are able to convince it that it should be shortened, then other people should be able to propose a plan. And secondly, and I'm not going to talk about that in detail right now, but as you may have read in the paper, the note holders have asked the court to say that they are a single asset real estate debtor. That's a special section of the bankruptcy code. If they are a single asset real estate debtor, this case will move very fast, because under those provisions of the bankruptcy code, they have to propose a plan or start making interest payments or let the note holders foreclose within 90 days. So I can't handicap that, and I can't handicap the venue motion either. I have no idea what that means. And I don't know how that single asset real estate issue will be resolved. That won't be heard until next month. So that's not on the table right away. But normally these cases run 1 to 2 years. So, two key issues in this case. And they're ultimately, if you think about it, it's the same issue. Valuation. What are those properties worth? And if they're worth substantially more than $716 million, Froelich will probably be able to stay in control. If they're worth substantially less, he will probably lose control. And the second question is feasibility. Feasibility. What's a feasible plan for an organization? A feasible plan is a business plan for the company that the company can sustain on a long term. And I say these questions are related. Why are they related? because what's valuation? If this was a used pickup truck, you'd go to the Blue Book. And I can tell you right now, it's between $1,200 and $1,400. But it's not. And nobody's buying this real estate for the scenery. You don't know what it's worth. This real estate is worth some multiple of the value of the timber that it can produce, that can be harvested. That's how you're going to kind of have what the value of this timber is. What's the value of the harvest that it can take? And that goes to feasibility. What's a sustainable rate of harvest? What's a rate of harvest that can continue to sustain over a long period of time? What's a rate of harvest that will comply with whatever you can get the regulators to go along with and won't get the environmentalists nutty? What's a rate of harvest that's a sustainable rate? Once you determine that, you can value the timberland. Well, these are the two key issues in the case. It can take some months before those issues are resolved. And that's the end of what I got. How often do they meet? We have some questions here. To participate, you need to be in Corpus Christi. I had a list of participants on the board, and one of them was the U.S. trustee. That's an officer in the Department of Justice. And very early in the case, they look at the list of creditors that the Talco has submitted, and they pick the largest, the 10 or 12 largest, and ask them if they want to participate in the committee. Then that person appoints the committee. You can call up the U.S. trustee and offer to be on the committee, but it's up to the U.S. trustee to appoint you. If you're interested in serving on a committee, I believe that the U.S. trustee may consider adding people to the committee. If you have a claim for $100, I'll be frank with you, you're wasting your time. But if you have a big claim, or if you think that your type of claim is a claim that's not represented on the committee, you certainly could call the U.S. trustee, and what you do is you go on the web and find the United States Bankruptcy Court for the Southern District of Texas, which is where it's located. And on that web page, there will be a link to the United States Trustee's office. Just call any phone number that shows up. Say, I want to talk to the U.S. trustee about the creditors committee in Calco. I want to be added to the committee. And who knows? You could be added to the committee. How often do they meet? I don't know the answer because I'm not a member of that committee. But creditors committee, I said cases can run for a year and a half. Sometimes the committee will meet every month. Sometimes the committee will meet for 3 straight days. So it depends on what's happening. If the committee has good lawyers, they will be in constant contact with telling committee members what's going on in the case. To participate, you need to be in Corpus Christi? No. Most members of the creditors committee are actually residents of California. I think there's one from Nevada, but most members of the committee are in California. The lawyers for the committee are in San Francisco. The financial advisors of the committee are in Los Angeles. And my understanding is the committee has always met in California. If Horowitz's plan is to file and win lawsuits, are the lawsuits part of the plan that creditors and shareholders have to approve? That's an excellent question. And remember, I told you that a company can operate in the ordinary course of business without court approval. But to do anything extraordinary requires court approval after creditors come. But my understanding is that filing lawsuits is part of his ordinary course of business. So he probably can just go ahead and do it. But I will tell you that if he was not, to give the guy his due, his lawsuits aren't completely frivolous. They don't just get thrown out on their ear and he gets charged for a double filing fee for filing a frivolous lawsuit. But he never did file a completely frivolous lawsuit, and I was representing the creditors committee. I would go into the court and say, Judge, he's wasting everybody's money. That's a waste of time. But probably the answer is no. Unfortunately, he doesn't have to get approval to file a lawsuit. When the old Fortuna Mill property and the houses in Scotia sell, where does that money go? Does it help Palcom and Scopac, or does Maxim get the money? There's good things and bad things about bankruptcy, but one of the things I told you about is the committee and the court scrutinize what the debtor does. And they will investigate past transactions, and they will scrutinize what management does. These are the companies in bankruptcy. And they've got a bunch of creditors that they owe money to. If they sell an asset, that money cannot go up here. That money has to stay here until the creditors are taken care of. So the answer is, that company cannot sell assets and upstream, we call that upstreaming the money to its corporate shareholders, to its corporate parent, without, without court approval, but no corporate approval. You can't do it. So that those assets and the value of those assets will stay with the company until the bankruptcy is resolved. If Palco sold this Fortuna Mill property for $10 million under Chapter 11, would the money go to Maxim or to the creditor? Same question. It would stay in this family of companies, and the treatment of that money would be part of the reorganization plan. So the plan would say, we're going to answer the creditors in full, and what we're going to use? We're going to use the money we made from selling assets, for example. Our assets at Maxim is taken out of the Chapter 11 company's fair game to creditors, or is that money gone? I'm going to give you a short answer. This is a very good question, and it's a complicated question. The answer is that the court will scrutinize transactions between the companies that are in bankruptcy and their non-bankrupt affiliates. So, any money that has gone... So, for instance, say, I told you, in bankruptcy, if they sell the mill for $10 million, Maxim can't get it. It's got to stay down here. Suppose they sold the mill for $10 million and gave Maxim the money the day before they filed for bankruptcy. And the court could require that they return that money. They could get that money back. But that's the day before bankruptcy, and it's out. Suppose 4 or 5 years ago, it needs to be bleeped. There's no assurance that that's the truth. And the longer it's gone back, you have statute of limitations, you have discovery issues, and I don't know anything that happened because I haven't investigated. I'm a bankruptcy lawyer, not a Palco expert. But if the owners of this company took money out improperly recently, you can get it back. A long, long time ago, it's just like a statute of limitations on anything else. It may be gone. If Horwitz Maxim at some point sell Palco, are the current creditors reimbursed, or does Horwitz Maxim keep all the profits of the sale? They don't keep a dime of the sale until creditors are paid. Same question as the first one we had. What exactly happens when a company gets rid of debt without paying? Is that just when the court absolves it? Yes. The answer to that question is yes. Regardless of who did what to who, you wouldn't be in this mess if you didn't have financial trouble. Courts, and part of the principle of Chapter 11 is, sometimes, and this is good, sometimes it's better to save a company and pay everybody that it owes 50 cents on the dollar and save the company and save the jobs and save the industry and just cancel some of the debt. And that's the way bankruptcy works. And if you're an individual bankrupt, that's how it should be. Say you're in and you had a medical problem or a divorce and you can't pay your bills and you got to file your credit cards in $15,000, you have to file for bankruptcy. If you do it right and you have a good lawyer and the process goes good, that debt goes away. You get what's called a fresh start. You get to start over. Bankruptcy provides a fresh start for the honest debtor, is what they say. And the same is true for corporations. They may not be able to pay all their debts. Some of the note holders may have to take stock. Some of the unsecured creditors may have to vote for a plan in which they say, we'll get 75 cents on the dollar. And we'll not only, that's horrible, we get only 75 cents on the dollar, but Maxim gets to keep 5%. You might end up voting for that just to get the darn thing over with and go on with your life. And when that happens, that's called a discharge, and the debt is discharged and it just goes away. Now that's what happens in bankruptcy. Summarize what you...
Summarize what you think will happen regarding debt versus value. Go ahead. I don't have a clue. There are people with very strong feelings on both sides of the issue. And they both have hired, and the good news is the council has to pay the lawyers from both sides. They think they have very strong views as to whether or not this company is worth more than the debt or not worth as much as the debt. And that's just going to have to be resolved. And they'll either reach a resolution or the bankruptcy court will decide. That's how this will go. And I don't know the answer to that. Impact to me as a retiree. If you're a retiree and you're receiving your pension, it should have no impact on your pension.
If you're a retiree and you're receiving a pension, it should have no impact on your pension. If you're a retiree and you have a claim, if the company is valued at more than the debt, you're sure doesn't want to pay your claim in full, and you'll get paid in full. The company's valued at less than the debt, there's a chance that you'll take, and you have a claim, and I'm putting aside the pension, because your pension should continue to be paid. If you're claimed, you may have to take a percentage of your claim in debt. You may not get paid in full. As a current employee, shouldn't make any difference whatsoever. As a current employee, as long as this company's operating, you'll get paid your wages and benefits. But that is one of the key questions. What's the value of that timberland and the real estate? And the answer to that question is a function of how much can it harvest? How much can it harvest in a sustained way? In view of environmental regulations and in view of how many trees there are. You could cut them all down tomorrow, but then you wouldn't have any trees for the next day. So what can you do? And you know it's much better than I do. How can the workers protect their pensions when their proceedings are in Texas? I certainly understand the nervousness about pensions. And if I was relying on a pension from a company owned by Charles Horowitz, I would like it a bit before or after bankruptcy. To be frank with you, if there's any, I don't believe that your pensions are at risk. They're certainly not at risk right now. If there was any risk to the future, it would be widely publicized, and you as an individual would not have to go to Texas. There would be plenty of people down there fighting for all retirees as a collective group, but you yourself wouldn't have to go to Texas. What can be done when a corporation uses bankruptcy as part of their business plan? You know, I teach a class in business organizations at the law school, and one of the things we study is when are shareholders liable? You know, if you are in an accident with the bus company, it's a private bus company, and the bus runs over you. There's a guy who owns the stock in the bus company. Can you sue them? Answer, usually not. Usually you can just go after the corporation. Is that fair? Well, no, it probably isn't fair because you're not going to get enough money if the corporation goes bankrupt. But that's the way the law is set up. Corporations, shareholders of corporations have limited liability. Bankruptcy is part of our legal system. It is subject to use and is subject to abuse. If Charles Horowitz was the greatest guy in the world, and he may be, because I don't know the guy, but if he was the greatest guy in the world and he had a company with too much debt on it, the right thing to do is to put it into bankruptcy and get rid of the debt. That's the right thing to do. Who determines the value of the collateral? It's really bad. This is where bankruptcy lawyers get embarrassed because it's determined by the judge. And if there's no agreement, Horowitz will get appraisers and experts and foresters and economists, and they'll get up on the stand and testify, and then the people who have opposing views will get their experts and appraisers and foresters. And the regulators will weigh in and say, well, yeah, it's worth so much if you cut this, but we're not going to let you cut this. And the environmentalists will say, and by the way, you're flooding Jesus out of so-and-so, so you can't cut there. And he'll say, yeah, but there's no law in front of me, and I probably can, so it's worth more for the judge to make a decision. And I wish there was a better way to do it. It is estimated that Horowitz made close to $3.5 billion off of Palco since the 1986 takeover, since he originally purchased the company for $900 million, and currently still owes $750 million. Does the judge take his profits into consideration? No. The answer is no. If there was any improper, illegal activity, the judge will look at it. But that maybe he may be happier. That's maybe one reason he's happier in Texas, where. Than California. Can you elaborate on the state agencies as a participant in this case? What agencies, what role are they playing? The answer to that, whoever asks that question should come talk to Mark or to Tracy, because they're much closer to the answer to that question than I am. I know that there were 7 or 8 state regulatory agencies joined the motion to move the case to California. And I don't know who they are, and I don't really know what role they play.
It's mainly the resources they access. See, Department of Forestry, Fishing Game, Water Quality, Geology, so mostly the resources agencies around the habitat conservation plan.
How will the bankruptcy affect the plans for Scotia, either annexation or community services district? Town requires very significant infrastructure improvements like new sewer lines, et cetera. Is Palco going to be able to dodge this expense? That's an excellent question, and I really don't know the answer. And I've never seen a situation like this. Bankruptcy allows people to shed assets with a negative value. But I understand they were going to sell them. I just don't understand this issue. I'll have to answer on this question. I don't understand this issue. I can't imagine that if they want to retain any goodwill in the community at all, and that's maybe an open question, but I can't imagine that if they want to retain any goodwill, they'll simply walk away from their obligations to the people living in that town. But I, to be honest with you, I don't understand that issue well enough. Payment rules. Priority, secured, unsecured, shareholder. Where do severance payments fall? This is a very complicated question. For the most part, they fall here. They're unsecured credit. I'm sorry to say I didn't write the rules. And it is an outcome. But it's priority claims include current wages, post-bankruptcy payments to vendors, post-bankruptcy payments to workers, any other claims necessary to keep the company operating during the bankruptcy. They also include, per worker, $10,000 in unpaid wage claims as of bankruptcy. It's possible that, and those are priority claims, they have to be paid in full off the top. Anything left over would fall into this bucket. It's possible, and this is a complicated legal issue. I actually talked to a lawyer at my old firm about this afternoon just to see if there's anything new on this subject. It's possible that, but this is unpaid wage claims. If you retired from Palco, or you were terminated from Palco a month before bankruptcy and were promised they'd keep you on the payroll and pay your severance for 6 weeks, that's unpaid claims, but is it an unpaid wage claim? You're not still working. Well, here you might rather that your lawyer could go to Oakland and argue it than Corpus Christi. I don't know the answer to that, but it's certainly possible that a large portion of it is a priority. And I wish I had a better answer for you, and I wish I had a more reassuring answer for you. Other than note holders, who are the other secured creditors? On this chart, there's $36 million with the Bank of America. That's a credit taken out in connection with the notes, and the money is used to help make payments on the notes, but it's owed to Bank of America, and they are also secured by the real estate. So, we said all night long, the land has to be worth more than $716 million. That's not, it's, there's a couple of details. It actually has to be worth more than 750, because you got 714 owed to the note holders and 36 to B of A. But there's another gimmick too. They've got a cash, they've got a pile of cash, which is dedicated to the notes. Remember how much is in that? They've got $24 million to just set aside to pay notes. So from 750, you subtract 24, and really the number is 726. That's complicated, and I'll go over that after the break if you want. It's really a question of how much secured debt is on this company, and it's at least the amount owed to the note holders, plus the amount owed to B of A,
plus the
amount that's in a cash account that's directly, that they have a direct claim against. There's also some secured debt at Pacific Lumber itself. That's the debt that's in Scotia. The debt at Pacific Lumber is up. This piece of paper says $100 million for Marathon Finance. I don't know if that's true. I'm not as familiar with Popwell as I am with the debt that Scotia has. But that would be the other secured creditor. How is the chairman of the creditors committee chosen? The members of the committee elect the chairperson. Why are lawyers allowed on the committee? Who could have a problem with them? The people on the committee are the creditors. So Jones Company or Alice Landowner, who Palco owes money to. But they're the creditors, unsecured creditors, so they're not the note holders, unsecured creditors. They're the six or seven largest creditors. But you can't have a company sit in a room. So the company gets to select a representative. Some companies will select a lawyer to go sit in the room because they figure the lawyer might be able to participate more, contribute more. Or they don't want to do it, so they'll send somebody else, and the lawyer is the only person. So there's no prohibition against lawyers participating in creditors. But the member of the committee is not the individual. The member of the committee is the company or the individual that's owed the money. Most hypothetical discussions on bankruptcy that I have heard are framed as if the company filed for bankruptcy because of something fairly innocent, lousy management, or financial difficulty. Financial difficulty is probably more innocent than lousy management. What happens if this is not the case and there has been strategic and intentional mismanagement? Is the case managed differently? Could some accruers be penalized or disadvantaged in the proceedings for this reason? Again, I don't know anything about Horowitz or Macklin, so I can't testify as to who did, or speak as to who did what to who. I told you on a chart that has since been erased that after Chapter 11, it's normally business as usual. Management stays in place and continues to operate the company. If there has been gross mismanagement or fraud, the court can kick out that management and put in a trustee to run the company. That happens in Chapter 11, but it happens very rarely. And there's a bias in courts to allow management to stay in place. But it certainly happens that if in the days before bankruptcy, the owner of the company is taking money out of the till, the courts will appoint a trustee. I think it's unlikely to happen in this case. If the debt for equity occurs, will the management change? Hard to say. If there's a debt for equity exchange, there will be the old note holders owed $800 million or $716 or whatever, will have new notes about $200 million, assuming that's a level that the company can support, and they will get the stock. The shareholders of a company, in America, under corporate law, the shareholders get to elect the management. The note holders may say, we like the president, vice president, the chief financial officer, and the general counsel of the company, and we'll keep them. But shareholders elect the board of directors, and the board of directors appoint the management. The shareholders will almost certainly change the board of directors, because the board of directors are now, as I understand it, largely maximum appointees. So they will probably change the board of directors. It'll be a decision of the board of directors whether to keep current management or not. And that's five hypotheticals down the road, right? You have to have a debt for equity exchange. new local level management. Well, I would think if they had a brain in their head, they would pick people local, which is what they were doing. How long is the company under protection of Chapter 11, and what happens after?
That's sort of like, that's a great question because it's a summary of all that we're talking about. The company will be in Chapter 11 until the plan is confirmed. Normally that takes, in big cases like this, a year and a half or two. But it could be quicker, and especially if the note holders win this single asset real estate issue. But normally it'll be a while. And afterwards, the company continues to operate, hopefully with a new business plan, and hopefully with a sustained sustainable harvest rate, and hopefully with a debt structure that it can carry. Has there been or will there be an inventory to document Palco's current timber inventory showing the rate of cut since the 86 takeover? There will certainly be the harvest rate, the historical harvest rate, and the projected future harvest rate will be a subject of innumerable discussions and arguments and lawyers and briefs and everything. But what has been, and it's actually already happened, and what's been to date, Mark or some of these people can tell you better than I, because like I say, I'm a bankruptcy expert, not a Palco expert, but I can tell you that that question goes to evaluation and goes to feasibility. Harvest rate is a critical issue for both of those.
And our understanding is that their current inventory information is now part of the fishbowl. So the inventory GIS information that up to now has been whatever it's called, a proprietary, is now open and public to the creditors committee and their attorneys to look at as part of evaluation. Is our relay. Which is significant.
Okay, I got a few more and then I can
work. I actually wanted to check if it's okay with you to go to the performance of the general crowd.
Whoever you want. I got five questions, but so I'll only get to
All right, do people want to see, show of hands, do people want to see Peter go through these last questions?
Yeah.
And if you need to leave, please feel free to do so. We'll go at least till 8, I mean, we'll go only to 8:15. If you have more questions, we'll take them over there. Peter's not going to answer them tonight, but we'll talk about what we'll do in the future to answer them.
Thank you.
Can the land be valued as real estate or sold off to pay operating expenses? Both are true. Valuing the land, when you value, like I say, if it's a pickup truck, you go to the blue book. It's a piece of cake. Real estate, you have to figure out how you're going to value it. And you have to look at alternative usage for the real estate. We don't cut a single tree. We turn it into a great big park and charge a buck admission at the gate to go and look around. Well, it's a fabulous park. But it's not worth very much because the buck admission you took in all the gate receipts, it's not going to generate a lot of cash. So that's not a very good use for this property. When you say valuing it as real estate, I'm not sure if you mean for real estate development. Certainly, if this property would be worth, if this property is worth a lot more, if you cut down the trees and build houses or suburban communities. Somebody may want to do it, and then you run into the question of whether or not it's legal to do it, whether you can do it, whether you can possibly, whether you'd still be alive if the lawsuits were ended, if you try to do it. But in order to value real estate, you look at the phrase is the highest and best use. And you try to figure out what's the best use that will generate the most value. And if that's a timber company, then you have to look at how much timber you can cut. If it's just a park, then you look at what you can charge for admission. But yeah, when you value real estate, you have to look at different uses. Can it be sold off to pay operating expenses? Certainly. But of course, if you sell it off to pay operating expenses, you pay the expenses, but then what do you have? You got nothing. So I think probably, if you want to have an operating business, you have to hold on to a good portion of real estate to maintain a business. Here's the best question of the night. Define honest debtor. Again, it's like the Supreme Court's definition of pornography. You know what? Yeah, I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. It's sort of the same. Yeah, the honest debtor gets a fresh start. And whenever you hear a court use that phrase, you know that this guy is up to bat. Because otherwise, it wouldn't come up.
Maxim and Pacific Lumber's SEC filings acknowledge an unfunded $20 million pension liability. Is that important? Yes and no. And I don't know enough facts, as I've said, I'd say a couple times, I don't know enough facts to give you a complete answer on the pension question. Almost every corporate pension plan in this country is underfunded. They almost all are. And there are benign reasons for that, and there are evil reasons for that. Let me give you a benign reason. If I have a corporation with 100 employees, and some of them are 60, and some of them are 40, and some of them are 20, and today I institute a pension plan, and the plan says, after you retire, I'll pay you 50% of your salary for the rest of your life. That's my plan, and I started today. And tomorrow, those people who are 60 retire. Well, the plan's hopelessly underfunded. I haven't put anything into it, and I've got to start making payments. So every plan is underfunded when it starts. And the government, when it set up these pension plans, it said, well, if we make them fully funded at the beginning, if I make you put in enough money today to cover everybody who's going to retire tomorrow, and enough to pay out for the next 40 years, no one will ever start a pension plan. It's just too much. So the way it works with pension plans and ERISA works is, you want to start a pension plan, great. You got to fund liabilities that accrue this year, but for the catch-up, we'll let you pay that up over time. So they all start off underfunded. They all try to catch up. That's one way, and that's a benign way they can be underfunded. What's the evil way they can be underfunded? The owner loops the money. He takes the money. That's the bad way they can be underfunded. And there's a combination. You're required to make payments every year into the fund to fund it. But gee whiz, if you don't have enough money to do that and pay your rent, and you go to the PBGC and say, I can't do it to pay my rent, PBGC will often say, okay, pay as much as you can to pay the rest of next year. Why do they do that? Because the alternative is you'll cancel a plan. And they don't want you to cancel a plan, so they'll let you stretch it out a little. All pension plans are unfunded. What's important is there enough money in there to make the obligations that come due this year? That's what's important. When it says it's $20 million underfunded, that means I've got 1,000 workers, I'm going to owe them all $1,000. If I add up everything I owe them, it's $1,000 per worker for the rest of their lives. That's $1 million. I've only got $500,000 in the pot. Well, I'm $500,000 underfunded, but it doesn't really matter, because I don't know some of that 3 years down the road. As long as I'm making payments right now, the hope is that continued earnings over the years will make up the difference. So, yeah, you'd rather that they said in their SEC filing is $20 million overfunded. That'd be fabulous. But it'd also be extremely rare. As long as they're continuing to make payments, as long as Maxim is on the hook, I really don't think that this is, the pensions are an issue at this point. But don't, you know, if I don't know what's going to happen here from now. And certainly it's appropriate to be vigilant and pay attention. I don't know what's going to happen. But everything I've read about this case, I've never heard that pensions are an issue in the way they were in so many of the other cases, like United Airlines and these other cases. Will the filing of Chapter 11 finally limit profits to borrowers over the short term, long term? He can't take out any money while the company's in Chapter 11. All the value that's in these entities, until there's a resolution of how creditors get paid, none of the money gets upstream to Maxim borrowers. None. In the long term, the company's worth $1 billion, and he's able to restructure his debt, yeah, he can continue to take money out. But as long as the company's in Chapter 11, he can't take out any money. Can the court's final ruling be appealed? Yes. All court's rulings can be appealed. And I'm not sure which particular issue you're talking about. Certainly, if the court says, I'm going to keep the case in Texas, or I'm going to transfer it to California, in either case, the losing side will appeal that decision. And then there's a second question, what happens while the appeal is pending? The court could say, the court has the power to stay its decision, in which case the case, if they transferred it, the case would stay in Texas while the appeal was pending, or vice versa. So we could get a final ruling on this issue on Tuesday, or it could be delayed. The appeal would probably take a couple of months. It could be appealed. In my view, I don't know how it will come out. I don't know how that issue will, the judge will decide on Tuesday. But even if one side appeals, the appeal will almost certainly lose. I'll tell you that, the appeal will almost certainly lose. The Court of Appeals will just say, it's a big mess, I don't want to deal with it. That judge, I'll let that judge decide. If the DA's fraud lawsuit is successful, how will this affect bankruptcy? I'm not familiar with that lawsuit. I can't answer that question. But maybe someone up here can answer. And that's all I got. Well, thanks very much. That's all for now.